And just kind of go over, and you know, repetition is extremely helpful, and it takes me multiple times to get stuff in my mind. So we're going to review and go over everything we covered, and just go over it, and just try to remember some of these things. Sometimes it helps to look. Sometimes it helps just to, you know, try to bring it to mind as we're going through it. And one of the real benefits of being able to do that, you know, we for one thing, we'll look at, you know, a lot of the thoughts and lessons and application things we thought of as we've gone. We'll touch on a little bit. We'll do a little bit of hit and miss. I actually put all 122 slides up there, so we won't have time to go through all of them. So I'll kind of pick and choose probably as we go through, but depending on how quickly I'm going through it. But you know, having this in mind is very helpful for a number of reasons. You know, when you find yourself with a little bit of time, you know, it could be as simple as driving or waiting on something, someone, or whatever. You can think about, you know, if you've got these kind of things in mind, you can think about them, meditate on them, and you know, just contemplate, you know, the lessons that we've learned, the stories, the applications of things that we learn from God's Word. All right, so before we even started this particular order, which is the part two of the United Kingdom, the part one, what Mr. Holt went over. So the last thing that he covered in that quarter of the United Kingdom part one affected so much into this quarter, especially in David's life. It was kind of a pivotal moment, and it's in chapter 12 when Nathan approached him about it, right? So 2 Samuel chapter 12, Nathan rebukes David, and he approaches him, and he says, David, you're the man. You sin in this. You sin. And it was just a really, really poor, not a hard enough word it seems, but a really poor choices that David made in that, just that one small, you know, time frame, instant, you know, time frame, but it affects so many things the rest of his life. How did David react when he was approached? Yeah, he said, when Nathan, you know, said, you're the man, you know, David accepted that. He knew it, and he was sorry for that. He was remorseful. He showed penitence. He repented. Doing exactly what someone who's called a man after God's own heart would do, right? So that happens in chapter 12, and we get into chapter 13 with our quarter here. And so that is the sin that set up so many things that affected the rest of David's life. So, and the thing to know is that God did forgive David. That God, you know, the things David did were pretty bad. You know, he had someone killed, essentially, you know, to cover up, you know, what he had done. God forgave him. You can't think that there's ever anything that we can do that God won't forgive us. Okay? All right. So were the consequences were removed with forgiveness? Were there still consequences, even though God forgave? There's forgiveness. There's still consequences? Oh, yes. Absolutely. And David, it really did affect him the rest of his life, I think. And in fact, chapter 12, verse 11. I can't read it up there. I'll read it from here. So God says, behold, I will raise up evil against you from your own household. I will even take your wives before your eyes and give them to your companion, and he will lie with wives in broad daylight. Indeed, you did it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and under the sun. And when we say there were consequences, it really goes further than that. What was it? It was punishment that God was going to do this because of what David did. All right. So those were the four things listed there. The sword will not depart from your house, God says. Evil will be raised up from his own family. Wow, we see that a lot, don't we? The wives will be taken, as we read. The child born to Bathsheba will die. So all of those things were going to be consequences. So the first, event that we got into in this quarter was Amnon. And so what was the deal with Amnon? What was that story? Just who we see all the names of the players in that story, right? So he really had an affection. Probably not the right word. Yeah, for Tamar. That's right. And so he went with her. It was Jonadab that helped him with that whole plan and sordid event. And Amnon did follow Jonadab's advice, and he violated her, raped her. And then he was very angry, hated her after that. All right. So what did David do about that when he learned about it? He didn't do anything when it came to some of these decisions, that were presented before him for his judgment. Well, years go by, and Absalom gets vengeance, all right? The long story short for our review. And he gets revenge, and he kills Amnon. And we'll see more about that timeline here in just a second. Well, Joab tries to help the situation, and he brings a woman from Tekoa to help David understand what he's doing or what he's not doing, the decisions that he's making. So she comes and she convinces him, and David understands that he's speaking about him. So Joab goes and retrieves Absalom from his being sent away. Exile, thank you. I can't think of it. Exile. So you see the timeline at the bottom. The incident with Tamar, when Amnon violated her, he was killed. Then 2 years pass, and Absalom gets revenge. He kills Amnon. And then 3 years pass, and he's out in exile there, as you can see. And then Absalom returns with Joab's intervention. Talking to David, but still, even when he returns, 2 years still pass, and before Absalom ever sees David, right? So, just years and years stretch through this whole event, and not dealing with it, not addressing it. So, we looked at some things, as thoughts and lessons after this. That even when your sin is forgiven, there's life after that sin. Greg pointed out, I think, in this lesson, the consequences are still there. And the point in this, we look if you take a before and after look at a sin that might be committed in this case. Before, what does that sin look like? Appealing, right? Looks like something we want, that we want a desire or whatever. But then on the other side of it, what does that sin look like? If our conscience isn't seared, right? What did it even look like to Amnon when he had committed the sin? He hated her. I mean, it was a complete reversal. Sin is a extremely deceptive, carrot that can be placed for us, and we're tempted. But if it's on the other side of it, well, there's death, and there's consequences. All right. So, all right, let's keep on moving along as we go through. We won't get to get every single thing. In our second lesson, this is reviewing the consequences that David would experience because of his sin. And the time passes by. And Absalom seeks reconciliation with David. He's been gone 2 years, and finally, Joab relays the message and helps Absalom seek reconciliation. And David does reconcile with Absalom. But Absalom then, who knows what happened, but maybe he was always this way or whatever, but he seeks the throne. Maybe he'd become bitter and really against his father. But however it happened, he develops a plan to take over the throne. And it's a pretty solid plan. It works. As he does it, he even gains some of the closest people to David who come over to his side. Remember, Ahithophel becomes his counselor. So, as a result of that, David flees out of Jerusalem. Remember the kind of the march, the real sad event of David having to flee and leave out of Jerusalem, and Absalom comes in and takes his throne. And as he does, we talked about what David lost control, respect, was obviously an ineffective leader. He could not hold the throne. And once again, David goes into hiding like he had, so much of his life. So, there were some who were loyal to him. However, citizens, were weeping and sorry as he leaves. The priests bring the ark and offer sacrifices as they truck out of Jerusalem and have to flee. And we talked about those who, some stayed loyal to David, Zadok, Abiathar, Ahimaaz, Jonathan, those all stayed loyal to him, and in a sense even became, we talked about kind of a spy system, so that Hushai, who was a close counselor for David, became a counterintelligence agent, he became a spy for David, right there, and Absalom welcomed him in. And takes him in and listens to his counsel, but Hushai was trying to thwart the counsel of Ahithophel, who was an extremely good counselor, was for David, and David knew he would be for Absalom, so Hushai was there to try to thwart that, and he does in the end. So we looked at some of the things, in that lesson, just some things that if I put myself in the shoes of Absalom, what would lead me to do something like that? And that's the only thing we think about. The scriptures don't tell us exactly, why he did what he did. We can imagine pride, ambition, respect for the chosen one. Contrast that with David's actions when Saul was king. What was David's attitude? He had already been told that the king was his. That the throne would be his, but David still what? He would not touch Saul. Had the opportunity. He had the utmost respect for God's authority. It even looked like God was giving David, in those situations, it looked like God was giving David, this is the path, this is what you need to do to take and accomplish my plan. You know, you could very well, David could have very well reasoned that, you know, when he, you know, he was standing there beside Saul, you know, his servant killed him there at the end. But David did not. He let those things belong to God and let God work out his plan. David flees and just puts everything into God's hands. Even whether or not he would ever return to Jerusalem in this sense. You know, David was willing to, whatever God's plan was, David was clay in the potter's hands. He put himself in God's hands. Alright, so, you remember on the exit, you know, some of the things that happened, Ziba's counsel to Mephibosheth, who was Saul, Mephibosheth thought he was going to get the throne. You know, because of what Ziba told him and so forth. Shimei, you know, he was the one hurling rocks at David, you know, get out, you know, and you know, cursing him and insulting him as they went out. David had that, and you know, David's servants around him said, let me kill him. Let me kill Shimei. David would not let him. So here's the information about Ahithophel. Was loyal to David, but he turned and went with Absalom in this and counseled him. Hushai goes and helps David in this instance. All right, so the deal was that Hushai was going to be counseling Absalom. And whenever he got intel or information that was valuable to David, he would give it to the priest, Zadok and Abiathar. Well, their sons, Jonathan and Ahimaaz, were, you know, going to be the carriers, the runners, who would get that information across the Jordan to David. David was staying up to the northwest in Gibeon, Hanan. Yeah, there it is. It's up on the, up there. So it was good distance away from Jerusalem. Alright, so, we're gonna have to move a little quicker. So, let's go on to the next lesson. Alright, so it comes to a head and there's, you know, Absalom's forces up against David's forces. And, you know, how that came about, we studied. But David's men would not allow David to go into this battle. They said, no, David, you're much too valuable a target to go into this battle. So he acquiesces and doesn't go. And Absalom flees from that battle, is overtaken. Absalom's killed in that battle. So, what was the thing that David had instructed his men, his captains, and his men, the soldiers, heard the instruction? David said what? Don't deal gently with Absalom. Don't kill him, in other words. So, and when he finds out, David mourns for him in a very, he mourns for him very outwardly. And, you know, and Joab points out to him, look, we have this victory. These men put their lives on the line for you. Your men, your soldiers, your mighty men, and David put their lives on the line. And here you are mourning Absalom instead of encouraging your men who did this for you. And David understood that. That he did need to show gratitude. It is a nation torn at this point, but David goes back to Jerusalem and he doesn't necessarily deal with the men that sort of just waits for later. Solomon ends up dealing with them in the end as far as what happens with Shemaiah and the others. Barzillai, remember, he was the one who helped David over in, when he was out in Mahanaim up in the northwest. He helped out. And David repaid him and his sons for that. You know, as a result of this, you know, David's love, we pointed out that David's love for his son Absalom caused him to make some really poor decisions, you know, through this whole event. And, but we do see David making, listening to advice again. Just like when Nathan had come to him, Joab gave him good advice. And, you know, we see what kind of man Joab turns out to be. Solomon ends up killing, having him killed. Benaiah, he has his servant, Benaiah killed Joab after David's gone. So we know what kind of man Joab was, you know, through this. He kills, you know, several men who are against David and for his own purposes, you know, revenge, you know, at times. But even with Joab and what we know about him, David listened to his counsel and his, and even if we say that David, let's say David knew that about Joab. I'm speculating here. I'm not saying this is what it was, but just in other situations, even if David knew that Joab was not the greatest character, even when the not so greatest character comes and rebukes you and says, "Hey, you know what you're doing here isn't, you know, right. You know, you should be doing this." If it's coming from a source that you find shady, right? Or what is it that I can do? And it even comes to the point where if I've done something wrong and a Christian comes to me, and what if this Christian comes and in a less than tactful way, in a poor way, manner, you know, attacks me and says, you know, you did this, this, and, you know, da, da. Take, what do I need to do on the receiving end of that kind of an attack or what seems to be abuse at the moment? Is there any truth in what they're saying? Right? That's hard to do. That is, I'd say, almost impossible. But if I can look for the truth in what someone is saying, no matter how they're saying it and what manner it's delivered, what does that show? That shows an awful lot of maturity, doesn't it? An awful lot of maturity when somebody can do that. Now, I don't know that. I don't know that that's the case here. David seems to have some confidence in Joab, so I don't think. Just something to think about. All right. So we keep on going. We see the relations there with David and, you know, his cousins and nephews and so forth. Sheba comes and revolts, and Amasa, let me remember the names here. Names that are skipping me. All right. Sheba revolts, and Amasa was he had gone with Absalom, hadn't he? Yes, that's right. So Absalom's captain, and then David brought him back and made him his captain. Over in place of Joab, who was his number one captain. That's right. So David calls Amasa to go after Sheba, and Abishai goes and pursues as well. They meet up with Amasa. They catch him at Gibeon, and what happens? You remember what happens? Joab, what does he do? Yeah, he, you know, it was a, I don't know, what's the word? It's a, I wouldn't say cowardly act, but it was, you know, it wasn't an honorable kind of a facing.
Drew him.
Yeah, he almost like, just saying, it's almost like a friend. He drew him to him, you know, as if, you know, as a comrade, you know, in arms or something, and you know, and stabbed. All right, so that's what they do, and that's kind of the, yeah, we're seeing Joab, you know, doing these kind of things, you know, he killed Absalom against David's command as well. Turns out there's a famine in the land, and David inquires of God as to why this is happening, and it turns out that it's because of the Gibeonites, and something that Saul had done, you know, way back, you know, earlier, before David. And so the resolution to that, the Gibeonites say, give us 7 men from the sons of Saul, and we'll hang them, and the matter will be ended. And so David does that, gives them 7 sons of Moriah and Rizpah, I believe it is.
Merah.
Alright, so we've seen the rebellion of Absalom, the rebellion of Sheba. You see David's life quite in turmoil, you know, and it was because, and God said that the sword would not leave him. That was one of the punishments. So, here we come up with the David's census and counting the men. We talked about that, and, you know, David realized after he had done that, that it was wrong. He was depending on numbers, you know, and we talked about that. David was remorseful and asked forgiveness, but God, again, provides forgiveness, but what? There's punishment. So, God gives him a choice this time. Man, when I was a kid, I hated choice. David did not like this choice. And David said, I'd rather be in God's hands, in your hands, for this punishment than to be given over to his enemy. So, David, so God sends, you know, destroys, what was it? Again, I mean, 77,000, I believe. They get killed. And David runs out. He runs to Mount Moriah. Remember the threshing floor? And he goes out there, he gets that, and he offers sacrifices. And it's at that place, at Arana, or Mount Moriah, that what's put right there, what's built there later. Yeah, the temple's built there. So it's all today. We see David. We see a lot in the inside of David in the Song of Praise. Some of his last words is nearing the end of his life. And if we read his words in Psalms, and it goes without saying that David was a man. God says it. He's a man after his own heart. Does that mean that a man after God's own heart makes the best, absolute right decision every time? No, David did not. That gives me hope. All right, let's keep going. Lesson 7, we're about halfway through. David's nearing getting older, and he goes into this battle, one of the last ones with his mighty men. Have the account. And he's in a one-on-one with a big fella, Ishbi-benob, a giant. Abishai comes and helps David. David needs help. And so David and his men agree that David's not going out to battle again after this event. Because he just wasn't. We read about David's mighty men and, you know, some of the things that they did and you know, the absolute loyalty that they had for David. And so we read some of those stories in this lesson. David wants to build the temple, but But what does God say? No, there's too much blood on your hands. He's going to charge Solomon with that task. So David makes the preparations, and he sets everything up. He gets everything ready for Solomon. He just does a lot of preparations. There's still a lot of that has to be done, you know, when Solomon takes the throne, but David does an awful lot of things that in preparing for that. He sets up the priest and their jobs, you know, are changing because of the task that they've been assigned with the tabernacle, since it was transportable. The task changed with the temple. And so David kind of sets that up according to God's laws, God's wishes. Musicians are set up, gatekeepers, you know, the judges, the whole system, the army. Gives instructions to Solomon, the design in 1 Chronicles 28, and offerings. They begin making offerings and bringing, you know, the things that will be required. All right, so then we get to the life of Solomon. David dies, and we get to Solomon. That's where we've been the last few lessons. And we notice that, you know, there's only a few chapters, you know, regarding Solomon's life compared to, you know, a lot more information on Saul and David. But with Solomon, remember those chapters. You can always find Solomon in 1 Kings and in 2 Chronicles. David does pass away. And when he does that, in most transitions of authority in kingdoms, you know, from one next successor, sometimes that's fraught with peril in history, and it is here. Adonijah wants to take the throne, and so he makes the plan. He does it. In fact, he's got a feast going outside the walls of Jerusalem, and you know, and he's called a bunch of people to him, you know, trying to, you know, take over. And David, you know, is told of that. Nathan and Bathsheba, they go in and talk to David and confirm, hey, you need to go ahead and make Solomon king. And so he does that. And Solomon, the transition is more peaceful than it might have been. And Solomon takes the throne, and the people celebrate with him there. Alright, so Adonijah makes a request. You know, Solomon's on the throne, he's the king now, David is gone. And Adonijah makes a request through Bathsheba. She makes the request, and Solomon reacts to that. And in 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 22, has a feel, doesn't it? Or did he just think about it? Verse 25. Yeah, he sent Benaiah to do that. Yeah, so he. Alright. Abiathar went with Adonijah during that rebellion that Adonijah, you know, coup that he tried to attempted, and Abiathar was removed from the high priest at that point, leaving on Zadok as the high priest. Joab reacts to the news of Adonijah, you know, being killed. And where does Joab run to? Runs to the altar and holds on to the horns of the altar, pleading for his life. And Benaiah is told to strike him down for for the shedding of blood. That he killed Abner, he killed Amasa, he killed Absalom as well. So Solomon is, you know, what David didn't do as far as seeing that justice was done during his life. Solomon is kind of doing that, you know, here at the beginning of his. Solomon moves Shemaiah. Remember, Shemaiah was the one who was against David, insulted him, aggravated David to say the least. So, but Solomon agrees that he could live, but he would essentially be under house arrest in Jerusalem. He couldn't go out over the brook Kidron. So he goes and he breaks that rule and goes out once. And so Solomon sends Benaiah to kill him. So one of the things that David writes for thinking about, see what David, what's in his heart. Psalm 19, we sing, the law of the Lord is perfect, the testimony of the Lord is sure, the statutes of the Lord are right, the fear of the Lord is clean, the judgments of the Lord are true, more to be desired than gold, more than fine gold. Did Solomon think the same way as David? Again, David, Solomon did not. He was after everything. In the beginning, Solomon was, you know, seemed to be the perfect choice for king. He had the great attitude, you know, very humble, asked God for wisdom, for knowledge so that he could judge rightly. But later on in his life, he did not think this way. And he desired. He multiplied gold, he multiplied wives, multiplied horses and everything, exactly what God said not to do. Solomon made treaties with nations around for a long time in his kingship, in his kingdom. It was peace, it was prosperity, and God blessed him with great riches, long life, life and peace from his enemies. All because of Solomon's attitude. And God expressed that in the first two visits with Solomon, or times that he communicated with him. But we remember the last time, the third time that God communicated with him, you know, God was very displeased with the choices and the life that Solomon was living. Formal lesson there. You know, at the beginning of Solomon's kingdom, remember, his one of his main things was to build the temple. He did a lot of constructing, a lot of building and other things, but the temple was the main one that he does first. It takes a while. It takes many years, 7 years, I believe. But remember, they got the timber from the Sidonians up in Tyre, and Hiram. King Hiram sent his craftsman, also named Hiram, as a craftsman to build the temple and oversee it. But they floated the trees from Tyre up in the north down in the Mediterranean to Joppa, and then land carried them, you know, to Jerusalem, where the temple. We went over the temple, all of the specifics of that, what it was made of, the gold that was in there. The feast, God was pleased. His glory filled the temple at the end of that when they had finished, and he was pleased. And then we see Solomon's wealth and prosperity as he grew and grew, and during this time that his heart changed, and he accumulated so much things and his wives, specifically says that his wives turned him away from God toward their idols and foreign gods. He even built the high places to worship them on as well. All right. And the last lesson that we went over Wednesday or Sunday, that even the foreigners came and visited and so forth to see Solomon's wealth and wisdom. But here in the end, he had married the different women, and he was worshiping Chemosh from Moab, Molech from the Ammonites, Ashtoreth from the Sidonians, and just turned away from God. So God, you know, because you've done this, I'm taking away the kingdom from him, but it would be done in his son's lifetime, not his own. So peace was taken from him as well. And, you know, in the end, you know, some of the points were made that, you know, Solomon was just a case of an opportunity to be lost. He turned away as he got older and away from the commandments that God had given him so long ago. All right. I know that was fast, and I don't know if that was extremely valuable. But just something to, you know, to keep it in our minds, you know, to think about, you know, and remember and, you know, try not to forget. Thank you.